So unless you've been living under a rock for the last couple of months, we are in the middle of a down economy right now. When we'll get out of it, who knows? But one of the things that B2B marketers are doing is looking for new channels, new offers, more nurtures, more content, you name it. But one of the things that they overlook the most is messaging. And what we're going to talk about on Demand Gen U today is how you can adjust your messaging in a down economy and give you an inside look at how we're doing the same at Metadata. Demand Gen U is officially in session. Let's do it. So I'm a little nervous for this one, Alex, and not because of the stuff that we're talking about, but we've never actually done a DGU episode together, and I feel like you're going to make fun of me here.
I'll try not to. I know my bully behavior precedes me at Metadata, but...
You said the B word. I wasn't saying the B word. Alex and I keep each other honest and sane in all things Metadata and product marketing. So I'm surprised that we haven't recorded an episode together yet.
I know. It's crazy. Well, I'm glad we're doing it today and talking about messaging.
All right. So before we get into any of this, I want to talk about the background of this, get into messaging a little bit. We've already done an episode for DGU on positioning and messaging, so we're not going to go too deep there. And then we're going to share the lesson of how you all can do this at your own companies and then, you know, where we are at in that process at Metadata. So first things first, it feels like last summer, that's when the down economy first became a thing. People are wondering what it was. Budgets got cut, layoffs happened, and then more layoffs happened and things started changing. But one thing that didn't really change for most companies was messaging. So why do you think that's the case?
Yeah, I was actually looking at some stats, and I think last summer it was more a lot of thought leadership on LinkedIn. I think everybody was posting recessionary content, and then at some shifts in ad copy. I think we saw that even at Metadata. But I was looking at it, and 140K people were let go last year, and 93K amount of workers have been let go this year. And I think it's just escalated. And so with that, I think there's a couple factors at play. Number one, all the big tech is letting go of workers. And I think there's a bunch of backlash. So damage control from a brand perspective, I think it's happening right now and not trickling down into maybe sales or CS or marketing messaging just yet. Business leaders are also looking at the overall strategy, how they can pivot, how they can adjust pricing, and all of that kind of stuff that also factors into some messaging that could come up. And then from a product marketing perspective, I think while you make shifts to storylines or messaging that's external, your positioning or your foundational messaging is not going to change with every shift. So taking some feedback and taking time to consider things, I think right now we're at that point where it's a bit of an inflection and people are starting to try things and shift when it's been building over the past couple of quarters.
So you pulled some stats. I'm impressed. You did your research. I also did a little research when I was putting this outline together, and I found something that I thought was pretty funny. I'll do a LinkedIn post about it one of these days, but here's what I found. I think the whole notion of doing more with less is bullshit. Just because you're doing more of, you know, bad things doesn't mean you're getting more done or doing the right things. But what I found was this whole doing more with less belief. Guess when it came up and guess when people started posting about it? 2008 and then 2000. Wow. During the dot-com blow up. So this isn't anything new. This is, I've straight up read some of these articles. And if you covered the date up of when it was published, a lot of them still held true today. Everyone like myself and probably you who have not gone through something like this before, there's a lot to pull from. And there are companies who have come out better at the end of it. So don't think that this is all doom and gloom. It's not great, but it's happened two or three times in the last 20-ish years.
Yeah. As millennials, we've seen all three up and down.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Wrong podcast for that. We got to bring the vibes back up. All right. So let's talk a little bit about messaging first and start with some of the basics. I think as product marketers, everyone kind of has their own definition of messaging and what it means. So how do you define messaging first and foremost?
Yeah, I think messaging is how you define what you're going to say to your personas and what kind of content medium that it's going to take place in. I think something else to consider, like maybe a level above or maybe adjacent to messaging and positioning, is product market fit, which is where all of this trickles down from. And it's important to keep that in mind, especially when you're trying to redirect messaging in a data economy. So you're staying away from perceived product market fit, bias, groupthink, and you're kind of trying to transition into evidence-based work, which is where I think we do a good job at metadata of refreshing our positioning documentation and then messaging and testing that externally. So yeah, messaging is how it's produced externally. And then of course, our positioning materials are the internal frameworks and different things we use to kind of pinpoint the value, the position, the personas, and all of that stuff that then is reflected outward.
So we'll make sure to link to it in the show notes for this episode. But for people who haven't listened to the DGU episode we did on positioning and messaging, in your eyes, what are some of the core components of messaging? What are the things that you need to think through when coming up with new messaging?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of a document or in terms of just areas?
Let's go with areas.
Sure. So I think it's important to remember for messaging, it's going to come in all different shapes, sizes. What a solo marketer is able to do and what an enterprise marketer is able to do might be different. But I think the important thing with messaging is just to start and to cultivate messages based on insights that you're gathering from your go-to-market team, from the market broadly, from your CAB community, and try to reflect those into matching them with the value of the platform and product, and really just work towards pulling that into ways to validate that messaging and training internal teams to make sure that messaging across the board is fluid and consistent. I think that's the biggest thing. For metadata, we have a broader point of view. We have a mission. We have a vision. We have different variations of pitches depending on pain points or personas, and then reference materials so folks can see that it's validated on the back end of what we're working on.
I love that. Now, for people who are listening who might not have the, I forget how many pages our messaging framework is, but it is a beast. Let's just assume that not everyone has that level of documentation. For the personas that they have, should they be starting small? Should they be going more broadly? Like, where do you recommend people first get started with messaging?
Yeah. Since you brought up personas, I think it's just important to remember that personas are blueprints. They're ideal customers. They're not your actual customers and they're not the actual audience. So I think there's just a level of validating that kind of stuff and just starting with a hypothesis, a guess, a question you want to answer, and fleshing that out based on your historical data or your go-to-market team, and really coming up with those roles that are in either a buying group or a lead buyer, like first and secondary audiences, and flesh those out first, test them, validate them, and then just keep improving upon that. I think you can take broad strokes initially just to get kind of something going and then niche down after that. I don't think that you can lead to a lot of indecision paralysis by trying to start small or trying to take on too many personas or too many audiences at once.
And we're cutting a little ahead here, but this just came up yesterday with you and I and some of the others on the go-to-market team. We were talking about potential personas that we would need to come up with recession-proof messaging for. And I think I'll take the blame for this. I probably had a few more than sales actually gave a shit about. And our head of sales engineering and enablement said, no, just keep it simple. Start with this, 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 and this. Don't care about any of the others. And let's just focus on that. So it is reassuring to hear from others that you don't need to over-segment and worry about doing too much too soon.
No, keep the KISS method. Keep it simple.
All righty. So we're working through a down economy right now. When this is going to end, I don't think anyone knows. But when does this light bulb moment take place? When do you realize that you need to start refining your messaging in a down economy?
Yeah, I think internal and external kind of signals. So internally, I think you start to hear it from your network of go-to-market teammates. You start to see shifting and gong calls or in decks that they're using, and start to get like maybe a lot of requests for these one-off things. And then that kind of signals perhaps that something needs to shift, or you need to maybe do some more research in an area or a topic or a persona. externally, perhaps ad fatigue, perhaps what you're seeing just from a content survey. We have a community here, so there's a lot of chatter in there that we can collect feedback from. We have a CAB. So just taking it all in and synthesizing, okay, there's definitely this shift that I'm seeing internally, externally, like it's time to maybe just do a review and pull up together and just gut check and validate some things or take some potential biases or opinions and see if there's any need to shift. And that's what we've seen here at Metadata. Or, for example, our messaging has always been reduce manual work, save time. And in a down economy, yes, that's true. But like, how do we reposition that to pain points or to specific personas? That's where kind of we needed to evolve the messaging at this point.
And I think this is more of a lagging indicator, but over, let's say, the last 2 quarters, maybe 3 quarters, many of our AEs who have been selling in MarTech for quite some time, they've been selling Metadata in the same way, and they've gotten deals that they thought were complete locks to close at the end. Mm-hmm. And out of nowhere, the prospect is really, hey, I can't get this approved anymore. And I think once we started to hear that more regularly, that was when the light bulb really went on for me, because I think I'm not a big news guy just because I don't like to just listen to all the negativity. But I think there's been so much doom and gloom about the down economy that people were almost just scared. Hey, I hear that this is happening. We have to do something. What do we do? I don't necessarily know what. But the more that this came up in conversations with prospects and even with our own customers when we were trying to renew, that's when the light bulb went on for me.
Yeah, that's such a good point, because there's a lot of chatter and echo chambers across different content platforms like LinkedIn. So it's like hard to parse out what's opinion, what's fact. And when you start to see it actually hitting quotas and things like that, that's such a good point.
So is there any quantitative data that you can look at when it comes to this, or are you looking at more qualitative things? Because you know me very well by now, I'm more of a qualitative guy when it comes to hearing things repeatedly on gong calls or getting feedback from AEs, and product marketing, it's hard to quantify sometimes. But is there anything you can quantify that, you know, helps you understand that, hey, the messaging needs to change?
Yeah, I think we just talked about it a bunch. And I also think with things like Gong, you can set up like different words to track and things like that. So you can take a quantitative approach to many of the qualitative indicators that we're seeing. But I would, for folks listening to this, I would really just stress that you need to come up with a question that then all of these signals are going to answer versus all of these signals and you're trying to retroactively fit it to a question, especially in a down economy. Getting the message right and being able to test and iterate on something that's data-backed, whether it's qualitative or quantitative, is going to be way more crucial to have clarity on versus looking for insights without context. Yeah, I think we've talked about all the data insights that we're looking at, right?
So you've got your messaging, you've got something happening in the outside world, aka the down economy, that forces you to tweak your messaging and really figure out what needs to change. How do you go about changing it? This is the good stuff. Where do you get started?
Yeah, chime in here because we're both working on this. But I think for me, it was taking a step back and just looking at the bigger picture, making sure I wasn't being reactionary and not going to create a bigger mess by adjusting or taking big swing adjusting messaging. So doing that, taking stock of what's working and what's not, a change in the market or the economy might not mean a full rewrite. It might just mean tweaking the language. And I think we've seen some small tweaks resonate with some of the ads that Brittany, our demand gen lead, puts together and some of the shifts in sales language. And then I would say getting started with staying close to customers. If you have a community, tapping into that and just keeping your ear to the market so you're not adjusting based on internal biases or opinions. Because again, you want to be smart, just like you want to resonate with your audience. You just want to be smart that you're making the right moves with the team and resources that you have. So I think we're doing a lot of that right now and shifting, making small shifts versus big swings that 3 months from now might have gone too far.
Yeah. And I think one thing that we're trying to do right now is and I would say it's intentional on my end, is trying to limit the number of cooks in the messaging kitchen, because I've found that when you have too many cooks in there, it just becomes a crowded kitchen and a very opinionated kitchen. So what we've tried to do is try to start small with who we are working with internally. And whenever we try to roll things out with the sales team and new, let's just say, positioning and messaging in general, even before the down economy, we've got a core group of sellers that we work with who are, one, interested in working with us and want to test things out. And then two, we'll also poke holes in what we're giving them and telling us what's working and what's not landing, rather than try and work with the entire sales team all at once. We're working with a couple of people right now. So I think that is really helpful. And then, I don't know about you, I've been spending way more time in Gong the last week and change about this exact topic and trying to just hear as many calls as I possibly could for deals maybe that did close last quarter and did not close, and then deals that got stuck too. So I've been creating playlists and just trying to hear what is even being said.
Yeah. Gong's been a great resource. And honestly, this has sparked some other projects like our win-loss analysis and things like that'll only strengthen and optimize the messaging that we're currently working on. But yeah, too many cooks in the messaging kitchen can just slow progress. So we have a good team right now.
Now, when you're having some of these conversations, how do you go about treating them? What are the questions that you're asking? Help people better understand how your much bigger brain with more brain cells than mine works.
Gosh, I'm rolling my eyes right now. Yeah, I'm structuring these questions to get at the pain that the prospect or customer is feeling and to connect that to the value of the platform. So I'll generally start broadly and just see where the conversation takes me. But normally I have an idea of maybe a value proposition that I want to change or validate. And just working with internal, a sales rep, for example, if I'm chatting with somebody like Cheese, just getting to what they're hearing, any additional resources that they might have or who to talk to next. And it's really just, I like to leave these kind of conversations open and see where it goes. But again, like I mentioned earlier, keeping the question that I have in the back of my mind, but letting the conversation go where it may.
Yeah, I think two questions that have been very helpful in just at a case study interview right before we're recording this, and then some of the conversations that I've had with other current customers right now are this. The first is, what would you do tomorrow? And what are the impacts of not being able to use metadata? Mm-hmm. And I know that people talk about that in case studies and it's what's life like with metadata and without metadata, but with fewer resources, lower budget, if you get a tool like metadata or really any tool taken away from you, what's the risk to the company? What's going to stop working? What are the implications to what you're doing right now? What are you going to lose? Because it helps frame the risk to marketing teams and potential risk to companies.
Yeah. Talking to external folks, I know I didn't touch on that, but yeah, those kind of questions are so key, and especially like getting out of metadata's way and just hearing broadly. I think you pick up a lot of pain points or additional areas like, wait, I heard you say, you know, something about campaign automation. Let's touch deeper on that. And so much can be uncovered by just hearing where that pain comes from and what they would do without something that's currently helping.
And we did it's the first time that we did this. I think we'll do it again, hopefully with a little bit more notice, but we did a AMA customer webinar right before Christmas last December, and we only invited late stage prospects to it. And we had two different customers, one, I guess both fairly longtime metadata customers, talk about their experience using metadata, yada, 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 all that good stuff. But the end of the discussion was centered around this. How would you suggest people who are looking to buy metadata make their case internally when every budget request is under serious scrutiny right now? And I think that's when I first started to think about, how do we reframe what we are doing? Because are the statements still true in a down economy? Yeah. Are they nearly as powerful and compelling? And do they reflect the current priorities of a marketing team or the current priorities of the company? Probably not. So what we're trying to do now is we're trying to look at, and we'll get into this here in a little bit, the CFO. How are you positioning and selling metadata internally to your CFO? Because I went to that webinar that Chris Orlov put on today with CFOs from Drift and from Gong and Invoca. And I think all three CFOs said they don't want to talk to salespeople. So you don't have the ability to make that argument to a CFO. You're relying on your champion internally to do all of that work for you. So you have to make sure that you're arming the champion of metadata and really whoever's going to buy your tool to make sure that they have the right information that they need to make it past the CFO.
Yeah, that's such a good point. I think when we're thinking about messaging and the CFO is coming up or other folks that are traditionally sought perhaps by a salesperson, it's important for the marketers and especially product marketers to just spend time parsing out in those conversations of a consensus buy, like who's going to be your target buyer? Who's the user? Who's the influencer? Who's gatekeeping? And what other like resources are they looking at? And then try to be a little more tactical with the messaging and how you're positioning it and how you're framing it. So yeah, it's not shocking that CFOs don't want to talk to salespeople.
The other funny part was that, and I made a joke about this, I think on a recent episode, I doubt Jim, our CFO, listens to DGU, but Jim, if you're listening, I'm talking to you tomorrow on this exact topic. All of the CFOs looked like twins. They had a CFO outfit on, basically. It was a button-up shirt with a V-neck sweater, and I slacked Chris Nethercoat as it was going on. I was like, do they like coordinate outfits, or is this just a CFO uniform?
So it's like the marketer's beanie.
I made see this is where the real Alex Burden's coming out. I made sure to not wear a beanie today because I knew that she was going to let me have it. So let's talk about some of these non-traditional personas that you need to start accounting for. And maybe we use metadata as the example just because we're going through this process right now so people can understand how should they be thinking about it at their own companies.
Yeah. Some of the personas we're thinking about right now, obviously, is CFOs. We're talking about how do we maybe position some of the materials that we have for marketing ops and obviously legal and compliance and those sort of things factor into the buying decision. So while I think we don't need to create content for each of these types of roles, it's more what role do these folks play in a buying committee and how can we incorporate that into the strategy and maybe adjusting some assets to meet those needs and make it easier for our champion to get deals closed and have a shared understanding of our platform.
Because I think, and I'm not going to give them a shout out because I think this is the first piece of content that I read from them that I actually found helpful. You know who they are. I sent it to you this morning. They had published something about just buying committees and the size of those right now based on a survey that they had run recently, I think within the last, I don't know, probably six-ish months, but in the down economy. And for our average deal size, there are close to anywhere between 7 to 10 people that are now involved in purchasing decisions. And I think before, prior to all this going on last year or starting last year, you could probably get by with, I don't know, maybe 2 to 3 people involved in a deal. And depending on the spend approval that the buyer had, sometimes it didn't even need to go up to a CFO.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting how things have expanded and there's still pressure on sales and the champion and different things to get everything done faster. So that's where it's really important, I think, to incorporate what kind of messaging needs to go to who at what stage of the deal cycle, which is obviously where updating messaging is really important.
So I think one thing that's historically been difficult, and there are tools like Winter out there that help with this to a degree, but it's message testing. Because unless your website is getting absolute insane traffic, it's hard to test with statistical significance what's landing and what's not landing. So as you're making tweaks to messaging and really trying to make your messaging recession proof, how do you suggest people test the new messaging that they're working on?
It could be as simple as hosting a couple customers and validating it. User testing, I think if you have platforms to be able to do that, and to see what's resonating, because it's not just about the words, it's how you're styling it, what else is on the page to give context. Obviously, platforms like Winter are great. I think the important thing is to get to an answer and not so much what kind of platform you're using. So start small, get a group together. I call them tiger teams of people to just help build consensus or try to validate whether the messages works. We work with Brittany. I work with Brittany on her ad campaigns. We can see very clearly what ads perform well, what messaging, and that can translate back to expanding to other things like a web page or different positioning pieces that we'll put out or slide decks. Just starting, I think, and having some way to get feedback and consistent feedback would be my recommendation. And if you have enough funds for a cool platform, that's even better.
Cool platform that's named metadata. Just kidding. We're not going to pitch that, people. I think the cheapest way that you can do this too is if you have a customer advisory board. We do at Metadata is using them as a sounding board. And then I'm going to be doing this tomorrow. I'm talking with our own CFO at Metadata on, hey, these are the value drivers that I think Metadata can help support and really meet in a down economy. When talking with CFOs, they've got three levers to pull, really. You can increase revenue, you can improve margins, or you can decrease costs. And what we're trying to do is just get inside the head of our own CFO and see, does this stand up with your thinking? Have you poke holes in it? And I think oftentimes the trap that I've gotten stuck in before at other companies is not realizing how many resources and people that you have around you to test messaging and just hoping that it works in the market. I didn't have a cab at my last company, but I was marketing to mechanical engineers and I had quite a few mechanical engineers in the office that I worked in. Mm-hmm. I am not a mechanical engineer. They know it much better than I do. So go talk to the people at your own company that meet these personas if you have that luxury.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think the last thing that I want to cover here is this. We've got the down economy going on right now. Like I said earlier, no one knows what's going to happen and when it's going to end. But how often do you suggest people and listeners look at their messaging? Is this something that they should be doing monthly, quarterly, every 6 months, you name it? Because this shouldn't just sit on a shelf until the down economy is hopefully over.
Oh, man. No, I know we didn't really get into all the permutations of messaging, but your positioning doc, your foundational pieces, I would recommend at least reviewing them every half, if not every quarter. And then the messaging that's trickling down from there, I would recommend reviewing every quarter just to validate and gut check. And things change. You have product launches, you have market conditions. And then if you have like different storylines, like we do with some campaigns or some of the approaches we're taking to the website right now, those can be optimized ongoing. So it's just finding the right cadence that you at a consistent time frame, you'll validate, revalidate, adjust the content that you're creating and the different mediums that you're using. But definitely for those larger pieces, the half or every quarter, just to get a gut check. Obviously, big things like a recession will change things maybe shorter term, but long term, your big value props may not be changing that much. So it's just how you're sizing pieces and how often they need to be evaluated, I think.
So I think I'll leave everybody with one big takeaway for me from the webinar that I sat in on this morning for a little bit. So there was, and it's hilarious to say this out loud, but one of the CFOs had mentioned that when you are trying to make a budget request for something that was previously budgeted before, or maybe something that was not budgeted and you're trying to make the case, make sure that you actually are able to articulate the R in ROI. Because many times, apparently, people are making budget requests and not really considering how they're going to measure the return. And sometimes, you know this, with the TEI study that we did, there are so many ROI studies and reports out there that have these just absolutely insane estimates of every customer who buys X company will see a 600% increase in ROI. All of the CFOs said that they really just don't give a shit about any of those because they know how fluffy the math is and how good it makes the company. So what they want is they want real ROI projections, and they want to use hard cost savings. And most importantly, they don't want you just to do it one time when you are trying to make the case for a new tool. They want you to commit to, when are you going to revisit this? When are you going to see, hey, we bought this tool and 30 days from now or 60 or 90, we're going to reevaluate the return that we're seeing right now. Like, they are looking for people to stay on top of this once they sign contracts. So don't think that because, you know, you're able to help your buyer estimate ROI one time that you're off the hook. Like, your buyer is going to have to show what the return is as they're using the tool. And if they can't, then I hate to tell you, your tool is probably going to get cut.
Yeah, I love an ROI calculator, but I think it's smart. A lot of platforms now are starting to put that kind of cost, time, savings. We just put it in metadata. Loom obviously does a great job of it. There's a bunch of other platforms that are doing it. Just so marketers that maybe not be in the CFO mindset of constant dollars and cents and savings can understand what the value platforms bring. So yeah, I can imagine that's very top of mind for CFOs.
Well, we'll have to do another episode, like we always say, on DGU a couple months from now, because we are, I would say, in the early stages of really adjusting our messaging in the down economy. But we've got a lot of good ideas. And now we've got to, mostly me and you, need to figure out how to do this quickly so that we can make sure our sales team knows how to talk about metadata, because they've got to talk about it in a different way than they have been for the last year and change.
Yep. Yep.
Awesome. Well, thanks everybody for listening this week on DGU. Alex, thanks for coming on. And we will definitely have to do another episode, maybe like a best of Taylor Swift or, I don't know, something
that's Conan O'Brien.
Yeah, maybe that's a solo episode. I'm not a huge Conan fan. I'm more of a Taylor Swift fan, but that's just me.
Oh, man. All right.
Thanks, everybody. See ya. Thanks so much for listening to another episode of Demand Gen U. Demand Gen U is brought to you by Metadata, the no BS marketing OS. B2B marketers use Metadata's marketing OS to drive more revenue without all of the manual and repetitive work. From running paid campaigns to personalizing web experiences to optimizing everything to revenue, Metadata automates all of this. This means less time spent on low-value tasks and more time spent on strategy, creativity, and driving revenue.